RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow. You think it's a mission? And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the June 27th episode of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Daniel Galvan. Come up here on this week's edition of the podcast. We're going to take back and look back at what happened last weekend at UFC Fight Night Singapore. Also, PFL 2, some controversy at PFL 2, so we'll talk about that. Plus, we're going to preview this weekend's Bellator 201, which, of course, is on Friday night from the Pechanga Resort in Temecula, California. Speaking of Bellator, we're going to talk about their streaming deal that was announced on Tuesday. Plus, going to have four interviews. We're going to talk to two fighters that will be fighting on that Bellator 201 card on Friday, Valo Eterno and Ryan Couture. Plus, we'll talk to Peter Barrett, who's going to be headlining the Cage Titans event on Saturday up there in the Northeast. And also, we're going to talk to one of the men that's going to be the co-main event of the LFA card on Friday night on Access TV, Casey Kinney. Of course, you may remember Casey from his time from Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. So we got a ton to get into here on this week's edition of the podcast. Daniel, how the hell are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Jason. Just really enjoying this little deal we have at this time of year with the World Cup in Russia, UFC in Singapore, where I just wake up every morning to some type of sporting event with my coffee. You know, it's a little too early for Buffalo Wings, Jason, but I make it work with some eggs and bacon. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. We actually just moved into the brand new Radio Influence studio / office. Actually, that's where I'm doing the show from today as we're making some big moves here in the Tampa Bay area. Our home office is going to be based here in St. Petersburg, Florida, of course, where the Tampa Bay Rays play. Actually, Lily Daniel, I could probably be at Tropicana Field in about 5 minutes. That's how close we are to the stadium. But man, it's been busy. Been doing a lot of building things here in the office and doing various things. It's been good, man.
Are you decorating it with anything? I know Ariel Helwani's big thing is like putting different toys around him and stuff. Like, what's your thing, Jason? What decorations do you have around you as you do the podcast?
There is nothing on the walls right now. I can see we've got a mini fridge in here, which is full of water and soda products, and we've got a couple of desks in here, and we've got the podcasting gear. Outside of that, not much in here right now.
I like the idea of you moving into a new office and the first thing you needed to have in there was a refrigerator loaded with Monster Energy drinks. That was your number one priority.
There actually is no Monster Energy in there right now, Daniel.
But that's because we're recording this in the afternoon and you drink it all, Jason.
No, it's because I drink it on my ride to the office.
I get you. Yeah, that's always...
I wanted to mention this about Monster Energy. I don't know if you saw this about... It was like within the last 2 or 3 weeks, I ended up retweeting it. The guy who runs Monster Energy, he had put a tweet out there about Dominic Cruz, and he said that without Dominic Cruz, they would have never gotten into the MMA advertising business.
So did you do some more research? What was the backstory here?
Well, Cruz was basically the guy that kind of introduced them to MMA. And, of course, you know, now they sponsor UFC. They're an advertiser in Bellator. They advertise, you know, they're sponsors of various fighters. But I just thought it was interesting that, you know, with, you know, where he said if without Dominic Cruz, you know, they wouldn't be this invested in MMA. I just thought from a business side that was very interesting.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, when you think of energy drinks, it is absolutely MMA. It is kind of that extreme sport resonates with things like Red Bull, Monster Energy. So that's kind of interesting that it took one dude to make it happen. When honestly, Jason, when you think if you're selling an energy drink, what kind of target audience would you want? It's probably the type of people that thoroughly enjoy dudes punching each other in the face with a cage, separating them and the fighters. I feel like that would be the target audience.
Well, I mean, you're looking for that core demo of men 19 to 34 or 18 to 34. I mean, that's the key demo they're looking for, and that is the MMA audience. You know, it's but there's so much going on in the world of MMA. Typically we like to start these podcasts off by talking about, you know, what happened last weekend, but I really feel that we really should lead off this podcast talking about the announcement that Bellator made on Tuesday. Of course, it was a press conference we knew about, and Vanderlei Silva pretty much leaked it to the world when they announced this press conference that he was going to be fighting Vanderlei Silva. But it was on Tuesday that Bellator and Viacom announced that they have signed a deal with, and I hope I'm saying this right, Dazn, D-A-Z-N. The press release says it's a 9-figure deal, which will feature 7 exclusive, and this is in the press release, stacked fight cards per year, and also another 15 events will also be on the streaming service that'll also be a part, be on the Paramount Network. So, you know, basically the thing is, we're getting out of the tape delay business, and you know, a 9-figure deal. Let's just say it's $100 million. Let's just hypothetically say it's $100 million. No matter how many years it is, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, however long the deal is, you know, look, this is great news for Bellator. This is great news for I preface this from the fight fan. It's great news that, hey, if we want to watch Bellator live, we're going to be able to watch them live. That to me is the great aspect of it. But the downside of this, Daniel, is now as a consumer of mixed martial arts, there is now another streaming service that we have to watch the fights that, in Bellator's case, would typically be on Paramount Network.
Yeah. Firstly, the idea of a stacked Bellator card, I just don't believe every card's going to be stacked as we look ahead to the card this week, which it has a pretty awesome main event and a solid co-main event. But by goodness, we've been watching a lot of these Paramount Network shows, and very few of them I would call stacked. So, hey, if there's a world where Bellator's delivering that many quote-unquote stacked cards on this new streaming service, then I'm all for it. Man, that really hurts my pocketbook, though, to lay down some more money for another streaming service, because it seems as though if you want the complete Bellator experience, these cards that aren't on Paramount are going to be noteworthy from how this is laid out. So that's kind of where it hurts the consumer. And I just hope it's a reasonable price, Jason, just because I have got so many streaming subscriptions, man, between Netflix and my HBO Go. Eventually, I'm going to have to subscribe to ESPN Plus. I just don't know how I'm going to make it work. But if Bellator got a good chunk of change, which it seems like, or Viacom did, that's actually something that I would not have expected them to be able to obtain, because it is hard, I think, for any MMA promotion that isn't the UFC to get significant money to broadcast their fights. So that in and of itself to me is the big time win for Bellator.
Yeah, you know, that's I think overall you have to look at this as a win for Bellator. With this money now coming in from promotion, going to give them another opportunity to go out there and acquire talent. So that's great for fighters. And as I was thinking about this, as I was sitting here in the office and I saw the news, I was just like, you know, I was looking at the pros and cons of this. And, you know, to me, there's much more cons of this. To me, the only con about it is the fact of, you know, hey, there's going to be another streaming service I have to pay for. And I had someone ask me a question on the MMAReport.com and said, how many streaming services do you have? And they just listed combat sports. You know, they listed Fight Pass, Flow Sports. There was a couple other ones they mentioned, and the only one I had was Fight Pass. I think they mentioned Fight TV, which Fight TV is not a subscription base. You're just paying for by the event. But, you know, and prior to us doing the show, I was looking everywhere to see if there is a price point on this streaming platform that Bellator is going to be on. I haven't seen anything. I went to their website. I put in my email. They're basically going to tell me when it's available in the United States, which clearly is going to be before September 29th, because if it's not available on September 29th. Well, Bellator's got a big problem because you look at this fight card they're putting on. Of course, you got Musasi defending the middleweight title against Rory McDonald in this welterweight World Grand Prix, which I absolutely love. I mean, this is, you know, things that get me excited as a fight fan. That welterweight Grand Prix, that gets me excited as a fight fan that no matter when they're doing those fights, I'm going to make sure that I have the ability to watch them. And, you know, in terms of the streaming platform, I mean, look, it's, I think overall, it's a great thing. You know, is it, you know, someone asked me, said, hey, is this a game changer? I wouldn't use the term game changer, but it's a great thing that, you know, now no matter where Bellator is doing an event, we can watch it for free. And it should be noted that this streaming service is also what Eddie Hearn is involved with, where he's going to put on, I believe it's 32 boxing events a year.
So if you're a combat sports fan, that's kind of where the value is. And maybe long-term, the streaming service adds other MMA promotions, specifically really interesting ones, because as a combat sports fan, if you find yourself in that medium range in between casual and hardcore, really the only subscription service that you need to be have access to is Fight Pass. I think this streaming service is going to move in that realm because Bellator has a really solid roster. They consistently put on one or two entertaining fights per fight card. Again, you're right. That September 29th card looks great. I'm not gonna expect to see Rampage versus Vanderlei when that card rolls around. That's just one of those fights I assume will never happen due to one or the other pulling out. But that's not drawing me. I mean, the fight between Musasi and McDonald is absolutely one that I can't wait to see. The World Toy Tournament, man, I really hope they match up Paul Daly and John Fitch again. That would just be a smart idea. But that tournament is like the perfect weight class, I think, to have a tournament because there are so many interesting names. And then I just think the other negative, I think this is a big positive, the other negative in addition to the subscription service is long-term maybe the audience of Bellator. To me, this may mean at some point we're going to see Bellator maybe no longer on the Paramount Network. Maybe this is a transition to the streaming service. And I think that's a scary jump for any MMA company that has a deal on TV, that is on TV, just because the potential audience for your product really, really narrows when you make that jump. So I don't expect that jump to happen completely. But it seems like with this, the long-term idea has to be that this is kind of moving along the trend with the cord cutters, or Bellator is going to be a streaming product when it's all said and done.
I actually had someone text me on Tuesday, basically what you're talking about is this kind of Bellator phasing out of the Paramount Network. Because look, when you look at the program that's on Paramount, Bellator doesn't exactly fit in there. I've always felt that I thought if Bellator could land on a sports network, and a sports network not named CBS Sports Network. I mean, I was talking like an ESPN or an FS1. I thought that could potentially be a quote-unquote game changer, but I thought this was an interesting comment on the MMAReport.com. This came from a combat sports fan where he asked if we thought the DAZN deal is better than, let's say, a Netflix or Hulu. Also, do you think Bellator can still get a deal with either Netflix, Hulu, or Pluto TV? FYI, Pluto TV is a free streaming channel that has movies, MMA, pro wrestling, boxing, news, cooking, outdoor. It probably has more channels than basic cable. I mean, look, when you sign one streaming deal, you're not going to another streaming service as well. So this is obviously, you know, this is where they're going to be streamed. But I mean, you know, for me as a consumer, my DirecTV at my home is actually up, I want to say, in October. And I'm really, I'm really considering cutting the cord, Daniel, just because, honestly, I really find myself not watching a lot of TV anymore. And when I do watch TV, it is by, it's either DVR or Netflix. I mean, look, there's some shows that, you know, that I probably like to watch that maybe is not available, but I'm sure some way they are available. But, I think overall, I think this is a great move by Bellator. I guess we can no longer have the discussion of when the hell are they going to end tape delay shows? Well, they did that, and kudos to Scott Coker for making this happen. But it's like, this is great news for them, but you know, you look at the fight card come up on Friday night, and you know, we're recording this here on late Tuesday afternoon, and like, I don't know, I feel like, is it wrong of me to kind of feel like no one realizes this fight card's going down on Friday?
No, I think that's an accurate portrayal of this fight card. I mean, this isn't a great fight card. This is a main event that I'm interested in, but it isn't a great main event. Like, I think Alejandra Lara has a real shot at beating Alumile McFarland, and she might even be my pick. But and it's a fight I want to see, but it's just not a fight that resonates. And as you kind of pick it apart the rest of the card, there isn't a whole lot you can bring to any, not even a casual fan, but a guy or girl who watches most UFC cards, I don't think there's much on this fight card that they would really get excited about. Now, again, to me, like, the second most interesting thing of this Bellator 201 card is honestly, like, the prelims. Just seeing guys like Joey Davis, Tyra Fortune, Ed Ruth, that's drawing me to my computer to watch it. So I just think this is a really lackluster card. Once again, challenging the idea of Bellator potentially doing these stacked cards. But again, maybe the money coming in from the deal allows them to sign more talent. Or maybe this whole deal can maybe serve as one last restart for Bellator, where they just get all their ducks in a row and they just consistently nail it with captivating cards and great matchmaking. Maybe that's what this promotion needs. Just to answer that question, I think the dream deal, even if the money's not there for any MMA promotion, is to get put on Netflix. Because when I talk about maybe the audience narrowing when you make the transition from TV to a streaming service, that's definitely the one streaming service where your audience does not narrow. The audience and the amount of eyeballs on Netflix is probably greater than most network TV, I think, at this point in time. Like most – I feel like the – I could be wrong here. I feel like the majority of America spends at least one part of the week on Netflix, and maybe more than that. Like, a lot of people – use that Netflix home screen to show them what they want to watch. So I think if you're a mixed martial arts promotion, whenever Netflix wants to get in the sporting game, you want to be the one they tag along to, just because that, to me, is a streaming service with a large amount of eyeballs. So yeah, speaking of eyeballs, there will definitely not be too many on Bellator 201. But I mean, I'm looking forward to the fight card just because as a hardcore fight fan, I want to see the progression of the prospects. And I think it's a pretty interesting flyweight fight between McFarland and Lara.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at those prelims, you know, you mentioned about the three big studs that we talked about last week on the podcast, but also Kerry Melendez is on this preliminary card. And also you've got Jordan Young, of course, moving up to 205 pounds. You look at that main card, you know, Liam McFarland, she to me is – she's one of the most fascinating people I've had an opportunity to interview. You know, and I've probably interviewed her five or six times at this point. And I always feel like, of course, I had her on the podcast 2 weeks ago. I always feel I learn something about her. Like, every time, you know, she offers up something new. You know, when I talked to her a couple weeks ago, you know, talking about why she considered the fight against Rebecca Ruth the toughest fight of her career, outlining all the issues that led up during fight week with her coach going into a hospital after they landed in St. Louis, and then talk about how she broke up with her boyfriend on the day of the fight, you know, which I even asked her, said, was there consideration to pull out of the fight? And she said no. And, you know, what, and my other big takeaway from the interview was she said, essentially paraphrasing here, is, hey, everyone is counting out Alejandra Lara in this fight, but they shouldn't. And I think part of that is mainly due to the fact of, I don't know how many people that are tuning in on Friday night truly know who Alejandra Lara is. You know, she won her Bellator debut at the end of last year. I like that matchup. Liam McFarland to me is, if I think if Bellator could somehow figure out a way to promote her, I just think she has such this likable personality that I think really would carry over to a mainstream fan. You know, when it comes to the rest of this card, the co-main event to me is still, it's awkward matchmaking to me. And it had Syed Watt on the podcast last week, and I led the interview off with it. I said, hey, this was a head-scratching move, and he pretty much agreed with me on it. I also thought the very interesting part about it was him talking about how, you know, the health insurance issue that fighters do have. Of course, you're going to hear from Ryan Couture here in a little bit. Valor the Turnover versus Christina Williams. Of course, Christina Williams takes this fight on short notice, replacing Bruna Ellen, which, you know, you're going to hear from Valor here in a little bit, where she talked about, hey, this is a little bit of a tougher matchup. And then Juan Archuleta versus Robbie Peralta. Juan Archuleta, one of the, you know, one of those top prospects everyone should be talking about in Bellator. It's kind of crazy that it took this guy, you know, entered Bellator 17-1. You would have thought maybe the UFC would try to sign him. You got Robbie Peralta, who I'm going to have an interview with Robbie up on the AmerReport.com this week. So I'm interested in this fight card. Will I be watching live on Friday night? I don't know, Daniel, but I like the main card, but it's also a main card that we both know is not going to draw a lot of eyeballs.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where if you're not watching it live, Jason, you definitely won't have to be too worried about getting it spoiled. I don't think if you get on the Twitter app, the whole deal is going to be going crazy about Juan Archuleta's performance against Robbie Peralta. I'm intrigued. I can't wait to watch these cards, but I'm definitely not on the edge of my seat. I'm interested in seeing if Archuleta can get past Robbie Peralta. I mean, Robbie Peralta represents the toughest dude Archuleta's taken on in his career, I think. And I'm pretty positive that he'll succeed in that effort. But to me, it's a lot of stepping stone fights for a lot of these fighters. Like Valerie Letourneau, as tough as Christina Williams is, I mean, this is a must-win situation for Letourneau, where anything less than an impressive victory is kind of a negative. And you know, maybe sets up, you know, the flyweight division is setting up nicely for Bellator, or more nice, not nicely, but more nice than I would have expected, because I thought it was going to take a very long time for Bellator to match McFarlane up with an interesting challenger. But here we are, and I'm looking at this matchup, Jason, and I think Alejandra Lara is going to pull off the upset. I really like the way she looked in her debut in Bellator and some of her action prior to the promotion. I think this is going to be a really close fight. But I think in this matchup, Lara is able to lock on a submission and pull off the upset victory. I'm not super sure what the odds are. I looked for them before the show, and they weren't out. Maybe they probably won't be out till Thursday. But I do have the sense that we have a win for Lara here, which I think sets up kind of an immediate rematch probably.
Yeah, I was just pulled up bestfightodds.com. Of course, we record this podcast on Tuesday afternoons. You know, nothing is there. I mean, typically it's pretty standard, you know, when it comes to it. Usually, you know, UFC, you know, lines are always out there, but usually Bellator, it does take some time. Actually seeing Bama's got some lines up there. I looked at a future odds. This one just caught my eye, and we didn't plan on talking about this, but I'm going to bring it just because I saw it. They have a future odd up on Rose Namajunas versus Jessica Andrade. They have Rose Namajunas at -130.
Wow.
That was my response too.
What do they know about the Rose? Or maybe it's the Andrade side. Maybe Andrade is
together. It opened at -140. It looks like it got put up there on June the 24th. And right now it's at 130, -130. That was just one line that I looked at. There is a line for Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz.
What is it?
Tito is a -265 favorite.
I mean, honestly, he probably should be a bigger favorite. That's weird to say. That's really weird to say, but I just have no confidence in Chuck Liddell. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's taking on Tito Ortiz. He wasn't necessarily a young up-and-comer. But at least we've seen Tito Ortiz fight in the last 5 years, you know. That's rough, though. That's rough when we're talking about 2018 and Tito Ortiz is that big of a favorite. You know you got to stay retired. But that Rose line is quite crazy, man. I really thought Rose, who kind of just showcased, just like she is the best fighter in the division in her last two fights against Joanna. You would think that the champ would get a little more respect than that.
By the way, speaking of MMA, had a chance to be in the same room with Ken Shamrock last Friday. Ken was here in Tampa doing a speaking engagement, and it was on the Flavor in Your Ear podcast. So it was by Ian Beckles. Was very interesting to kind of hear. He says he's retired. He's done. He said that someone had asked him recently if he'd fight Brock Lesnar, and his answer was yes. And basically, he noted the fact that he would like his chances against Brock because, you know, basically he feels he can grab onto Brock's legs and get him to the ground, kind of like what Frank Mir did in their first fight.
Okay, this is a stupid question. Does Ken Shamrock have a better chance of beating Brock Lesnar than Brock Lesnar has of beating Stipe Miocic or Daniel Cormier? I guess we'll stick to Stipe. I just feel like Stipe would destroy Lesnar.
I do too. I mean, when you're talking, if this was Lesnar pre the, you know, the health issues he had, I probably think a little differently. But yeah, at this point, I look at Brock, and to me, it's kind of these special type fights. You know, you do a fight against John Jones. You know, Cormier, I'd put in that mix. I saw DC and Jones going back and forth on Monday. Which made me think of our buy-sell segment from last week. DC Jones may be the biggest fight the UFC can make.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as soon as that fight gets booked again, those two know how to sell a fight. I mean, they're going to get personal. I mean, as you saw, Jones getting pretty personal, really personal. They're going to get ugly. These two have natural chemistry when it comes to just selling a fight. And it's a really intriguing story. It's as intriguing as you can get when one fighter is clearly better than the other, because all the mistakes Jones has made put some doubt in the accomplishments he has over Cormier. So you could redo that fight and sell a bunch of money and make a bunch of money. It's weird. Like, we're jumping around a bit, but I think Daniel Cormier is the first fighter in a very long time who's talked about retirement immediately or soon, you know, within his next two fights, where I'm like, please don't retire. Like, so often it's like, oh God, why aren't you retired? But for DC, it's like, it's kind of crazy. This guy is so old and kind of absolutely in his prime.
And I believe when he says he's only gonna fight two more times.
100%. This guy, the one thing about Daniel Cormier is this is a smart dude who's incredibly, I don't know, methodical. He plans it out. I mean, this is a guy who sets his stuff out and he lives. I mean, it very much like Brian Stan in that instance.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, DC, first off, he's so likable. You know, and he's a great analyst too. I always enjoy, you know, listening to him, and especially when they put him on the broadcast. He's one of those guys I feel like when you listen to him talk, you know, I feel like I learned something from him. And but yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, and you may, we're kind of jumping around here, and you know, but when you think about John Jones, it makes me think about USADA, and of course Josh Barnett, you know, has been released by the UFC after asking to be released, and I know Joe from Houston had asked us a question about Josh Barnett's interviews on Ariel Helwani, the pros and cons of USADA, and I watched Josh's interview. And, you know, he brings up some, you know, one of the points of that he brings up is something that I've talked about in the past, is that this agreement that UFC fighters have to sign with USADA, where it's this is the part I hate about USADA. And I know there will be people out there say, oh, if you're a clean fighter, you should have no problem signing that agreement. But ultimately, when you're talking about drug testing, it should be something that is collectively bargained. And you look at the Josh Barnett situation, and he talked about that interview where he just like basically felt like USADA was just trying to find something to stick. And I know there's a lot of fighters who have trust issues with USADA, and I can't blame Josh Barnett. I mean, look, I think Josh Barnett will probably either end up in Ryzen or Bellator, maybe a combo deal between the two. But, you know, it's the thing that I find fascinating is we are starting to see more and more fighters openly, publicly talk about USADA. Now, privately they would, but now you're starting to see it in a public form, which I think is a great thing. And I would hope that USADA would look at the Barnett situation, would look at some other situations that have happened. You look at the JDS situation. JDS is gone public talking about it. I would hope they would look at these situations and realize, okay, maybe there is some things we need to improve on.
Yeah, Josh really provided. I mean, look, Josh is a guy who is very much a human being who marches to the tune of his own horn. He's okay with cutting bait. He's okay with doing his own thing. And the value he provides to all the other fighters is he really is open to challenging institutions or challenging things that not very many people do or shedding a light. And it does seem like the way he brought it up, I mean, this is an organization that is more playing the role of prosecutor than anything else, you know, looking to govern out punishment rather than the priority being just something to say for the fighters. It's almost like guys are being treated as if they are guilty and prove it if you're innocent. And obviously USADA provides quite a bit of value, but there are so many negatives in so many situations that have gone awry that there definitely needs to be a come to Jesus moment. And maybe Josh Barnett will play that role, but I'm looking forward to see what Josh Barnett does, but I get the sense this is a guy who we're not going to see fight for a very long time, which and by very long time, I mean like a year, which is a long time for a guy as old as he is. It just seems like he's content not fighting. And the sad part about the whole situation is that it did seem like USADA kind of crushed the fighting spirit he did have, because at the time of his suspension, this was a fighter who was absolutely a premier heavyweight in the world, and we weren't able to see him test himself against the best.
Another question we got from Joe, and this is something that I have seen on MMA social media for, I guess, about the past 2 weeks. And it was thoughts on Luke versus Ariel and how MMA fighting handled the new MMA hour. First off, I think that Vox Media, who owns MMA Fighting, and I guess my perspective on this may be a little different because I do own a digital media company, I think they made the absolute right hire in Luke Thomas. I mean, Luke hosts a 5-day-a-week show on SiriusXM. He knows how to do a talk show, and that's what the MMA Hour is. And that's what the MMA Report is. This is a sports talk show that concentrates on mixed martial arts. So to me, they absolutely made the right decision. You know, in terms of if you were going to hire someone who was currently on your staff, Luke Thomas was, and no disrespect to other people at MMA Fighting staff, but in terms of that role, Luke Thomas by far was the right decision. I think having that show being on Monday, at essentially, I think Luke's going from 12 to 2 and Ariel's on from 1 to like 5 or 6 o'clock, depending on how many guests he has. I don't know if that's the right decision. I also, if I was MMA Fighting, I would have rebranded the MMA Hour into a new name. I can tell you personally, I've been in that situation very recently about potentially, you know, do you add a new host to a show and do you continue with the show name or do you go with something else? You know, so for me, if I was MMA Fighting, I would have named it something else. I mean, maybe you just called it the Luke Thomas Show on MMAfighting.com or something like that. But to me, I think the only thing I look at Vox Media and think they did potentially wrong is basically going right up against Ariel. And I saw somebody noted, I guess Ariel had like 1 million viewers on you know, I know the show's on the ESPN Twitter, and I think I saw someone say that Luke was, you know, somewhere close to 100,000.
Yeah, man, it's a tough one because I think Luke Thomas, like you're right, is absolutely the guy I would go for. I mean, I actually messed this up. I should go on here and just completely like trash either Luke Thomas or Ariel Helwani and get us some views. Like I should talk some massive trash talk and get us some views and get us some retweets and subtweets. But Luke is the guy, man. This is a guy who's proven that he can go out and talk about MMA. And he brings a lot of different things to the table than Ariel. And that's why I think it was probably a bad idea to continue the show if you're MMA Fighting. I understand if you're Vox Media and you look at the MMA Hour and you see this brand that has been created and you have ownership of it and you want to continue to use this platform. But I think in the long term, it's just rough because there isn't a void. There isn't a void for the MMA Hour because that show literally is being done on ESPN. That exact same show is being done on ESPN. And so for Luke, it's kind of it's a rough spot for him just because I think when it's the MMA Hour with Luke Thomas, he's going to constantly be compared with the MMA Hour with Ariel or Ariel's show. And when I think of what Luke Thomas does super well, it's not really what the MMA Hour is. Like personally, what I think of the MMA hour, I think of, you know, a 6-hour show. But more importantly, I think of news coming out of it. It's kind of like a news show where basically all the guys who just fought or guys who are going to break the news, announce the retirement, etc. And that kind of supplies the news feed. Whereas with Luke Thomas, to me, like, he's – what I find interesting about him is his analysis as well as his interaction with fighters. Not so much the news making, but the dissection of the fights in the general MMA world. So even though the MMA Hour is a brand with a lot of value, I think it would have been better just to put – just to, you know, look at what Luke's already doing with his MMA analyst deal and just – put all your horses in that basket. It's just rough to go head to head with Eric Helwani for 1 hour. Because again, look at Twitter during that timeline. That Twitter was just all the news that was coming on Ariel's show. So it's very similar to like a late night show. Like, let's say there was only one late night show on ABC, you know, the Tonight Show with Jimmy Kimmel, and it got huge ratings. And it's like Jimmy Kimmel left. And then the same week that you replaced Jimmy Kimmel with your new host, Jimmy Kimmel was on another network TV show on the exact same time. That void was never there because he is still making that product and it's still accessible to people.
And look, and Ariel and Luke are both tremendous MMA reporters, but they both have two different styles. And Luke is a guy that people – I don't know if there's a middle ground with Luke Thomas. I think either you like him or you don't like him. And there's – you can look on MMA social media and there's some people who clearly do not like Luke. And Ariel is a different reporter. Ariel is an interviewer. Let's not kid yourself. Ariel's making himself a nice living in what he's doing. I mean, we're over here making a little money on MMA, but I mean, he's making a lot of money on MMA, but, but it was, I just thought it was interesting the way the MMA community kind of reacted to all that. And Ariel's going to be able to get interviews, and I'm sure there's going to be fighters who may not want to do an interview with Ariel and do an interview with Luke. And vice versa. There may be guys that are fighters that don't want to do an interview with Luke, but we'll do a video interview with Arrow, because at the end of the day, Arrow is the biggest reporter in this game. And, I think it's awesome that he had 1 million views on Twitter. That is tremendous. That's great for mixed martial arts. And, you know, and the thing that, and you touched on this, and what I respect a lot about Luke Thomas is he's doing something that a lot of people, there's not a lot of great fight analysts out there. And you know, I do enjoy watching when he breaks down fights, you know, and, you know, I have people all the time, you know, especially with me running a podcasting network, they'll pitch this idea and, you know, and I'll say, okay, what makes you different than any other podcast that's out there? And yeah, you know, you just try to do some things that are different. And, and look, I'm sure both are going to be very successful, but, it's at the end of the day, Luke Thomas was the right guy out there. And, it won't be a marathon show like Ariel's show is.
Yeah, because there just isn't that much time in the day if you're an MMA fan. I think if you're an MMA fan and you really want to, you can fit both those shows in your diet throughout the week. But by God, if we had 2 6-hour shows, we're talking about half the day, and that's just Monday. But yeah, that show – it will be interesting. I mean, I saw like Luke's first guest, like he started off with Dan Hardy, which like that just sounds like a great idea. I mean, you talk about one of the best analysts as a fighter, one of the best journalists as an analyst. I think that's kind of the place I would go with that show. Maybe move it to a different day. But the way I look at it, it seems like maybe the MMA Hour is going to become a podcast that is more of a podcast than a live radio show, which is, I mean, that's where most things are. I think Ariel's show is very much a live event. You want to listen to it, especially if you're an MMA journalist, because more than likely, if your job is to write news articles, you're going to have 5 to 6 things that come out of Ariel's show that you're going to write about. I mean,
let's be honest about Daniel. How much of MMA fighting's content was based off Ariel's show?
Yeah. That's kind of what it was, right? It was, you had the show and then you have like 10 articles with, you know, the soundbite, the video at top and the quotes. And I mean, look at this show. I mean, we talked about Josh Barnett. Later on, we'll probably talk Rashad. We mentioned DC. I mean, that's just 3 moments that happened on the show that we're talking about. And it's going to probably be like that every single week.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But let's get into the buy sell segment. Now we've only got three questions this week that we came up with. Number one, Michael Chandler's next fight will be in the UFC.
I am going to buy this, Jason. I think that Michael Chandler I think if you're one of the top fighters in the world, but you don't have the competition to prove it, and you've only been a part of the same pond your entire mid-career, it's got to be driving you nuts not to do it. I don't think the money's going to be there immediately, like it may be for Bellator, but I have a suspicion that Michael Chandler is going to want to test himself, test the waters, and attempt to do maybe what Justin Gaethje is doing. So I'm buying that Michael Chandler next fight will be in the UFC. How about you?
I'm buying it as well, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I think for Bellator to keep Chandler, they're going to have to overpay for him. You know, and it's not to say that, you know, Michael Chandler doesn't want to fight in Bellator. I think that Chandler is, I think he, in, and I go back to his appearance on the Joe Rogan podcast, where I got the sense of he's kind of at this point of his career where he knows there's not many more contracts left. And for him to be considered the best lightweight fighter in the world, he can't do that in Bellator currently. And it's not trying to disrespect Bellator. It's just the honest truth. I mean, you can't be the Bellator lightweight champion and people are going to consider you the best lightweight in the world. And really, what hurts Michael Chandler's case of that is the Will Brooks fights. We saw what happened with Will in the UFC. And we'll talk about Will in a little bit. So, but, you know, it's, and if Chandler was ultimately going to return to Bellator, and the deal is, it could be end up here any day now, you would think that he would already signed a new deal with Bellator that tells you him and his management want to see what the UFC is going to offer. If the offers are comparable, I think no question he's off to the UFC.
Yes, because I think the offer is going to be bigger from Bellator today. But if it's comparable, if I'm Michael Chandler, I go to the UFC because I tell myself that while this contract may be less than what Bellator is, what I'm gunning for is that next contract I might sign. He, like you said, he may only have a few more contracts left, but the real value for him, I think, is go to the UFC, have success, re-sign a new deal, and that's when you're talking about lots of money. It's only going to take one or two wins for him to put himself in a pretty awesome bracket when it comes to payroll. Now, that's going to be a tough challenge for him because it's really hard to beat the top five, top six, seven 155-pounders in the world. I don't think I would even pick him in those fights. But if you're Michael Chandler, without a doubt, you think you can. So that's why I think that's going to be his move.
By the way, speaking of Bellator, was announced late last week, Lyoto Machida is now a Bellator fighter, signed a multi-fight deal with them. And number two question is, Lyoto Machida will win a title in Bellator?
That is a great question. And before we go at this, Jason, what divisions do you think Lyoto will compete in?
He's mentioned 85 and 205. Mm-hmm. To me, his best chance. God, oh, do I dare say 205?
I think his best chance is Ryan Bader wins the heavyweight tournament. He's the heavyweight champion. He vacates the title, and then Lyoto wins the light heavyweight championship in a fight against Vanderlei Silva.
Look, would it shock? Look, I wouldn't be surprised if he went into Bellator in late 2018, early 2019. And got a victory against Ryan Bader?
I would, man.
I would be more surprised if he could beat Gegard Mousasi.
Ooh, that's yeah. Wait, let me think about this for a second. Yeah, I think so. Just because there's a chance he could catch Ryan Bader, there's a more likely chance the speed is there for Lyoto against Bader. But man, both those results would really surprise me based on how Lyoto looked in his more recent fights, man.
Well, okay, you mentioned King Mo, who has mentioned he's going to go down to 185. I would pick King Mo against Lyoto Machida.
Hey, that's actually a fight where I might pick Lyoto. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's pretty clear how King Mo's going to beat Lyoto Machida. That is one where I just think that there's a pretty big gap between Bader and King Mo. I think, and Musashi and King Mo, even though King Mo's like right at that next tier, that's a very interesting. That might even be the first fight you go with if you're Bellator, King Mo versus Lyoto Machida.
Now, look, when it comes to the question, I'm selling it. I don't think he wins the title in Bellator.
Yeah, me and you, like, obviously, we're simpatico here. I don't think he does as well. His best bet, though, is probably 205, or if there's a new champion in middleweight. And his name isn't Rory or Musashi.
Yeah, yeah. Number three, was announced, speaking of Ariel Helwani, was announced on his show, Rashad Evans is retiring. And our question here is, Rashad Evans was the best fighter to come out of the Ultimate Fighter. Now, when we talk about some of the top fighters that come out of the Ultimate Fighter, here's throw some names at you. You mentioned Rashad Evans. Forrest Griffin, of course, won the UFC title. Michael Bisping's won a UFC title. TJ Dillashaw, the current bantamweight champion. Nate Diaz, Kenny Florian, Tony Ferguson, Joe Lozone, are some of the fighters of note to mention who have come out of the Ultimate Fighter. I guess you got to throw Matt Serra in there since he did win a champion. In terms of, is he the best fighter to come out of the Ultimate Fighter?
The one issue here that we have is we just saw how Rashad ended his career, and it wasn't great. And we're living in a moment where TJ mm-hmm. Dillashaw and Tony Ferguson are taking the world by storm. But we're talking about a guy who was the best 205-pounder on the planet when the division was pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, I think the question is, if we have this question 3 years from now, I think our answer is different.
Yeah.
Because I would buy this as we sit here on June 26, 2018. I buy this. If we come back 12 months from now, Daniel, I don't know if I'm buying it.
Yeah, I kind of totally agree with you. I think Rashad is above everybody before Dillashaw Ferguson. When you look at, you know, Griffin obviously had plenty of success. Nate Diaz is one that you could push and pull, but due to the fact that I just feel like Rashad Evans had more success at his peak, at his highest level. He got those victories, and he got them again and again. I would put him over Diaz. And maybe today, just looking at the accomplishments, he's there. Obviously, when you watch the skill set of both guys, there's just a major evolution in the fight game. But with respect to maybe their context, Rashad's probably I'm buying this. Now, Jason, here's what I'll throw at you. Who do you think will be the guy? Will it be Dillashaw or Ferguson 4 years from now?
Ooh, that's a good one. God, could you ask me after August 4th?
Yeah, I think I know, right? Because that's going to answer. Because
As we sit here, I would say Dillashaw.
Yeah.
Just because of what he's accomplished to this point. But look, if we get to, you know, depending on what's going to happen with Tony Ferguson and Khabib and Conor and all that, I mean, it's an interesting conversation. I mean, look, I think right now, when you're ranking, you know, these, you know, people who have come out of the Ultimate Fighter, as of right now, I think I got to put Rashad one. I'd probably put Michael Bisping at number two. I mean, look, you can't write the history of the Ultimate Fighter and the history of the UFC without mentioning Forrest Griffin. Because if Forrest Griffin, if that fight never happened, I don't know if we're here talking, Daniel.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, that absolutely shotgunned the sport. He's definitely top five-ish. He really is. And then I think those are probably the big three. Although, again, maybe Diaz is in front of Griffin. It's hard for me to say. And then, like, don't forget about Kenny Florian, but he's obviously very clearly behind those guys. And, man, it gets tough the more you dissect it. There are a lot of former Ultimate Fighter guys. And I kind of – yeah, Bisping, to me, would be behind Rashad. And the more I think about it, probably he would probably be number two.
Have you watched any of the season of the Ultimate Fighter? Because I watched a part of the first episode.
No. Is there anyone –
I have no interest in it.
Yeah.
The ratings have been what the ratings are, but it's just the same show over and over again. I'm sure by the time, we get to, International Fight Week, which what is next week? Week after? We're getting right there. I mean, hell, it's almost July. It's crazy. It's almost July, which does remind me, man, there is nothing on sports-wise in the middle of the week anymore. It's either watch a baseball game or there is nothing else to watch.
Yeah. And there is, well, there's soccer in the morning.
Well, yeah, in the morning. But it's tough for me as, you know, as a United States citizen. I just don't really have a rooting interest. You know, I do, you know, if I'm around TV, I will, you know, watch a little bit, but it's tough for me. But I mean, there is a PFL, you know, last Thursday.
That's true.
Unfortunately,
good transition.
Unfortunately for them, you know, the what people are talking about their event has, you know, not really what you want people talking about. You had the Robert Watley, Tiago Tavares, which to me is, I don't know how anyone in their right mind think that should be a TKO win. And look, I like Rob Watley. I've interviewed him plenty of times. You know, in my interactions with him, super nice guy. I mean, look, he did not mean to do that. That was an unintentional blow. That should be a no contest. And quite frankly, that fight should just be rebooked. And not, I mean, look, for Robert Watley, it's great he got 5 points. But that should have been a no contest. You know, to me, that, you know, that's just, it's still baffling to me about that, of how somebody could think that should be a TKO win inside the Illinois Commission. Like, that to me is just, it's so baffling.
The idea that, like, the fact that it was an accidental strike justifies the TKO victory is, like, so backwards. It's so insane. It's so stupid. Like, the fight ended because of an illegal strike. The fact that it was deemed an accident does not make it illegal. Like, it's absolutely nuts, man. It's like if I poke your eye on accident and you go blind, I don't get the TKO victory. You shouldn't. He shouldn't have got it. You could tell by his comments that he totally understands the situation, but he's obviously not going to go out there and campaign to turn into a no contest because that's 5 points for him.
Daniel, as I was watching these fights live, and by the way, I think I saw it peak at 1,900 viewers on Facebook. Ugh, that's not a very good look. But I'm watching it live, and I'm just like, if I'm sitting in the back, are you looking at that going, you know what, maybe I should make it look accidental. I just kick my opponent in the groin. I'm going to get a TKO win.
Look, man, if you're losing and you're fighting Illinois, you better go for a groin strike because that's a hell of a tactic. I mean, if you're not sure, I mean, like, at the end of the day, you can hit a groin strike, and if you get the guy can't, and you got to hit him hard as heck, too, because you won't get that finish. Because, look, Robert Watley got rewarded for landing a groin strike. I mean, that's it. And
that's not how he wants to win a fight. You know that, but you know what? If you're him, you got to take it.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is that wasn't the only insanity when it comes to officiating.
Oh, man, the Efren Escudero, Jason High fight. First off, Escudero took this fight on, I think, less than a week's notice. Misses weight, so he actually does not get the points for a third-round submission, which would be 4 points. Jason High, I don't know. This is, and I tweeted this. The problem with what happened in that fight is the penalty for Jason High could be $1 million. That's what this could ultimately cost him.
Jesus Christ.
What is the penalty for that referee? Because you cannot find a credible referee that is going to sit there and say, that was a tap. That was not a tap. I mean, look, you can't. I understand why Jason High reacted the way he did. But with what happened in Arizona a couple years ago in the UFC, it's not a good look for Jason High. And if I'm the PFL, do I want to be in the Jason High business anymore? I don't know. But I understand why he acted the way. I don't condone the way he acted, but I understand how he comes out that way. I don't know how anyone. I mean, I would almost. And I think one of the things that you have to question with, I think, any MMA referee is how much jiu-jitsu have they trained in? Because I think every referee should know what it's like to be in a choke.
Yeah, that was rough. That was really rough. And I guess it's because the corner of Escudero was saying he was tapping. I believe that's what caused him to do it, but that's just a mistake. You got to tune
that's
out.
That's a bad referee. And this is yeah. And once again, goes to part of what the penalty referee had. Most likely that referee worked a show on Friday or Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I was representing a fighter that's going to fight in Illinois, I'd be wanting to make sure that guy wasn't working my fighter's fight.
100%. Because that's just drastic. That's absolutely drastic. And it's a fight he's looking good in. And it's sad, too, because like what Jason Hyde did after the fight, I think if it's any other fighter, we're not talking about it. But the fact that it was Jason Hyde, it's like, Jason, this is the one thing you can't do. You can't even like look at a referee the wrong way without us making a big deal about it. So that was a major mistake on Jason Hyde's part. But if it's anybody else, I don't think we're talking about something like that.
And you look at just the state of Illinois. I mean, God, man, you see what happened with Tavares and Watley. You see what happened with Jason High Escudero. Like, I feel bad for fighters who are on that regional scene in Illinois because that's what they got to deal with. I mean, that's just a bad look on the commission. Will Brooks gets to win the main event. Game plan seemed pretty simple to me. Jab, takedown, a very decisive win for him. Sean O'Connell, man, he gets beat in the first round, come out, gets a knockout in the second round. And for anyone who watched the prelims, Sean O'Connell was calling the fights on the prelims. Damn, he's good. He's good. I know he does some stuff with SiriusXM. I really enjoyed listening to him. Brandon Halsley looked like he was moments and multiple times that fight from losing, but ends up getting a victory due to referee's doctor stoppage due to a cut. Look, it was a great lineup. I know people have asked me about the ratings. I'm reaching around some sources, haven't found out yet, but I can tell you this: they did not make it in the top 150 on Thursday night, which is not a good sign.
Well, three things, Jason. One is, you mentioned it. How the hell do you commentate and then fight in the same night? I don't understand that. Two, dude, the Foster Ramsey Nijem fight was awesome and worth mentioning. That was a great fight. That was a fight where, man, Nijem looked great in round two. Ultimately, got caught with the knee and finished. And how are we not talking about how Kayla Harrison's the next Ronda Rousey, Jason?
Oh, God.
I think she looked good, man. Comes out there, gets an arm bar. I mean, obviously, Brittany Elkin is not necessarily, Cyborg Santos.
Look, we both know they were putting her in a fight that they felt she was going to win. She looked good.
But she better be in fights and she better win, because I tell you what, if you're PFL, Kayla Harrison is definitely their top commodity, is she not? Am I wrong? Is that like who? What fighter do they have that is more interesting than Kayla Harrison?
When you put it that way, she definitely is the most interesting.
I think
the PFL's got a really good roster. When you look at their roster, I mean, they don't have the big names that Bellator has, but they've got a good roster.
Well, their cards are stacked for a non-UFC card. I mean, every fight matters.
And if I lived in a town where the PFL was coming, I'd make sure to buy a ticket just because, rail on Bellator, but let's be honest about it. Their preliminary cards, three-quarter of that is just local fights. That's what it is. But that's a sound business model. But you look at that PFL, they're not trying to sell you local fights. They're like, we're putting on, I just kind of look at it and go, I don't know how they're going to make money.
Yeah, me neither. Maybe it's a long-term play where you hope you get a streaming deal. I mean, that has to be it if you're PFL. But at this point, it's a stacked roster. If you're a hardcore fan, you know a lot of these names. And when it comes to casual, Kayla Harrison represents that fighter they can use as like a light to provide light to the rest of your roster. I think you just got to be smart with which fight cards you put her on. Put her on fight cards where you have the fighters with the most potential to blossom into stars if there's a lot of people watching it. And that's where you put Kayla Harrison on there. Because like you put her on a card with Will Brooks. Hey, Will Brooks isn't going to be a superstar unless he's super dominant. He doesn't have that fighting style. So I would be a little smarter with the matchmaking next time I put Kayla Harrison on a card.
put her on the car with heavyweights.
Yeah, some Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, and I mean, look, she's naturally going to get compared to Ronda Rousey because of the judo background. And that's, but, you know, look, it's, you know, I think the bigger question with Kayla Harrison, 12 months from now, is Kayla Harrison a PFL fighter or a UFC fighter?
I think she's going to probably still be in the PFL, but honestly.
If she continues this rise, I think within 24 months she's in the UFC.
Yeah, that's that 18-month range is where I'm thinking she makes that transition. I mean, shoot, we're already putting her in the hypothetical cage with Cyborg Santos. Christian Cyborg. The crazy thing is with Cyborg, that look at her entire career. We've always talked about, is she going to do that super fight where she cuts weight? And now for Justino, it's like, is she going to go up and wait and fight Kayla Harrison in 4 years? You know, at the very end of Cyborg's career, her hypothetical, I mean, obviously we're projecting a lot. I mean, Kayla's going to have to win, you know, 6 in a row, 7 in a row. But the big money fight might end up being at the end of Cyborg's career, her going up in weight to take on Kayla Harrison.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, and it'd be interesting to see how they develop her. Before we get into the interviews, do want to mention about what happened last Saturday morning or Saturday night in Singapore, early Saturday morning here in the United States. UFC Fight Night Singapore, we had Leon Edwards get the win over Donald Cerrone, unanimous decision. OSP getting that armbar win over Tyson Pedro. Jessica Ai with the win over Jessica Rose Clark. Li Jialing gets the win as well. You know, some of the things that really stuck out to me about this card, Jake Matthews, I thought he looked really good. You know, you see a guy that's no longer cutting down to 155 where he's at. Peter Yan getting that knockout through to Ishihara. To me, he's a guy at 135 to really pay attention to. You know, Leon Edwards, he's an interesting guy at 170. You know, Donald Cerrone, you know, I just am interested what his place is at 170. Like, I ultimately feel that if the UFC would go with a 165 weight class, that is the weight class for Donald Cerrone.
That would be absolutely ideal for him. And it's just not going to happen, though, Jason. I think his best weight class might still be 155. It's just going to be – he's probably not going to make that cut. And I wouldn't advise it. I think he's going to have some success at 170. I mean, this was a great fight between him and Leon Edwards. And he's going to hang on as a, you know, a top 10 welterweight-ish. But Leon just had a little too many answers. I mean, Edwards, to me, is just a spectacular fighter. Again, this was a really close fight, but it was one in which Edwards really timed Donald Cerrone quite well, landed some savage strikes, and was able to do a lot of visible damage as well, really bloodying up Cerrone. But to me, it was more about the timing, a lot of the counters that Edwards threw. Again, a very exciting fight. I love the very end where they both agree to just let it all hang out. Great main event. I think Donald Cerrone is going to probably spend the rest of his time at welterweight. And I think he's still got a few more rides in him. This wasn't a fight where Edwards clearly established himself as a way, way better fighter. This was super close. Cerrone's still pretty talented. But it's going to be tough for him to go out there and compete against the best 170-pounders. And for Leon Edwards, I mean, this is a guy who knows who he wants, calls out Jorge Masvidal, and I think he's going to get that fight.
I mean, look, from Donald Cerrone, it's not been a good run here. 1-4 in his last five fights. But when you look at his losses, Masvidal, Lawler, Till, Edwards, all guys ranked in the top 15. Leon Edwards is the lowest ranked guy who's at number 11. So, I mean, you know, I saw some people, you know, mentioning that the retirement world, Donald Cerrone, you know, that's definitely not going to case. I mean, I expect we're going to see Donald Cerrone fight for probably 3 or 4 more years, but he's not a guy. I don't see him as that older fighter that will go to Bellator. I think that when his days in the UFC are done, I think that's when you see the end of Cowboy Cerrone. But you look at that welterweight division, you look at that top 10, you know, you think about where that top 10 was, say, 2 years ago to where it is now. It's a very interesting division. I did not watch UFC Singapore live for the most part. I turned on about the last two prelim fights, but then my nieces came over, and so I turned the fights off. But if somebody got up at 4:30 East Coast time to watch that fight, God bless you, because I was not doing that.
Yeah, I was difficult, and I did not do that. I mean, I thought the fight card itself was pretty enjoyable. I mean, Jessica Ai looks really good at women's flyweight. I mean, she clearly beat Jessica Rose Clark on the feet and showcased some takedowns. OSP, phenomenal light heavyweight fight between him and Tyson Pedro. It was back and forth with OSP getting rocked and getting that submission win. Li Jingliang looked awesome against Daichi Abe, but that competition isn't the greatest. But Li's a hard hitter. To me, a phenomenal fight between Shane Young and Rolando Dye. Like basically, guys, if you haven't seen this card and you're going to pick and choose some fights to watch, I think you got to watch OSP Pedro. I think you got to watch Peter Yan's performance against Taruta Ishihara. And Shane Young, Rolando Dye is, to me, the best fight. It's another back-and-forth fight with a great finish by Young, showcasing his ability to withstand a lot of strikes and get that finish. And also, Song Yadong looked epic against Felipe Arantes. I mean, just a phenomenal performance by Song Yadong, and clearly a name to watch.
Yeah, it's, and of course you see the UFC really developing that Singapore market, but of course no UFC coming up this weekend, but of course we got the International Fight Week coming up, so that's going to be here before you know it. But right now we're going to get into the interview portion of this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, and then after the interviews, me and Daniel will wrap up this week's edition of the podcast. Up first, you're going to hear from Ryan Couture, who will be the co-main event of Bellator 201. Then you're going to hear from Viola Letourneau, who will also be a part of Bellator 201 main card. Then you're going to hear from Casey Kinney, who will be the co-main event of LFA on Friday night. And then you're going to hear from Peter Barrett, who will be in the main event of Saturday's Cage Titans.
Hey, Ryan, man, really appreciate time. It has been a while since we have seen inside competitions. It's actually going to be over a year when you step inside the Bellator cage here at the end of the month. So what's been going on since that fight at Bellator NYC?
We started actually talking about getting back in there in October, and then unfortunately I tore my meniscus and had to get a quick surgery to get that patched up. Got bumped to the back of the line, and then it took a while to get rebooked. So I would have been ready to go early this year, but it's always a logjam in lightweight division, so it took me a while to kind of get to my turn.
What's the toughest part about recovering from a meniscus injury?
Honestly, it really wasn't too bad. The surgery was quick and easy, and I think it was about 3 weeks of PT, and I was back on the mat, at least being able to drill and do some lighter work, and just worked back into it from there. So if you got to have a knee surgery, that's the one I'd recommend.
For you as a fighter, is that like the worst time is when you just physically are unable to get on the mat and you're basically trying to figure out what to do?
Yeah, you get a little stir crazy. It's such a big part of my day-to-day life between my own training and coaching and everything else, being in the gym regardless, because I've got to go there for work. So watching everybody else train and have fun and do what I want to be doing is always tough. But, luckily I was able to focus just kind of on my rehab work and at least be doing something productive that way. And then didn't take too long to get to where I could get on the mat and teach and make do with my diminished capacity for the duration.
When I talked to your opponent, Syed Awad, I mentioned him. He was, when this fight was offered him, he was kind of surprised with the run he's been on. For you, when you get this fight offer, were you surprised that the name was Syed Awad?
A little bit, yeah. I think, he's on a streak, and I haven't fought in our division in a while, and the last couple times I did, it didn't go my way, so... So I can see that, but I think style-wise, it's a good matchup too. I think we're an interesting fight and should be a crowd pleaser. So I get it from that perspective, and I'm happy for the opportunity to fight someone who's been doing so well and hopefully steal some of that shine from him.
I think when a lot of people think of your opponent, they think about the striking. And when people think of you, they think about your submission work. Do you feel that people underestimate the rest of Syed's game?
Absolutely. I mean, his heavy hands are such a showstopper and an eye catcher, but he's always working to finish. He's dangerous on the ground, and he's aggressive from everywhere. So that's why he's on the run he's on and why he's got the record he has and why he's always a contender is because he can finish a fight a lot of different ways and you got to be ready for that.
I mean, you train, you compete against guys who have a high level grappling game. How would you say he compares into, you know, people you work with and also people you fought in the past?
I think he's got maybe a slightly different style. It's sort of all out aggression. I don't think there's any aspect of his game that's terribly conservative. So he's going all out and looking for a finish at all times. And that can be dangerous if you're caught off guard, but I think if you're well prepared and composed, that I can use that to my advantage as well, and just out position him, start to kind of shut some of that offense down, wear him out, and frustrate him. I think that's going to be my key to getting the win.
Being composed, is that something that took you some time to kind of understand what you have to have that trade, or was that something that kind of came pretty quickly for you?
I think I just in general tend to be fairly calm and relaxed and that's a big part of it. And so in a way that makes that sort of composure come a little more naturally to me. But that said, it sort of comes and goes too. Every once in a while I catch myself getting flustered and getting a little, you know, almost, I don't want to say desperate, but getting that kind of, that composure starts to crack and things never look good for me when that happens. So it's always a process of making sure I'm mentally prepared and doing the right things in training and visualizing the right way so that I avoid those kind of breakdowns in composure that never tend to lead to anything good.
How can you work on that inside the training room to make sure that inside a fight, if, you know, your opponent's got the upper hand for, you know, last minute or so of how to kind of turn that thing around, is there anything you can do inside the gym, or is that just something that, you know, really you can only kind of overcome inside of a fight?
Well, I think it's making sure that you're training with the right people who can push you and who can put you in those bad positions and then forcing yourself to start rounds in bad positions and you know, working on those scenarios where it tends to happen, where you tend to and get that little bit of a panic sensation in the room and learn to deal with it and control it and own it. And you can simulate a lot of that stuff in the room, even though it's not the real stakes of fight night. You can still put in those reps.
You're coming up on 4 years being a Bellator fighter. How would you say you are different now as opposed to your first fight in Bellator back in 2014?
I'm definitely not getting any younger. I feel that much more comfortable and at home there, and I think I kind of understand how the promotion works, and just feeling good, feeling confident, and happy to be where I'm at. I think my approach to training and to fighting is fairly similar to how it's always been, but I feel like I keep getting better.
As you have gotten older, have you found different ways to, make sure your body's in peak condition? Is there things that you've had to alter in training based on, we all grow older, our body acts a certain way?
I don't just automatically recover as easily as I used to when I was younger. So I got to find the right time to kind of take my foot off the gas and give that little extra break and give my body a little more time to get back to 100%. I think it's the same old cliche that you got to train smarter, not harder as you get older. And my best to find that balance.
You were mentioning about the aggression of Saeed Awad, and it kind of made me think of a previous guy you fought in Patricky Pitbull. Do you view that their aggressions are very similar, and this is the type of fight you have prepared for in the past?
Yeah, there's definitely some overlap there. They got a little different approach to it, but they're both dangerous in a lot of the same ways, and always hunting for that kill. So, I think I've definitely been there in that fight and in fights during my career with guys that were looking to take my head off and be prepared to try to neutralize that. So I feel like I've had focus in my training camp. I feel like game plans not ever had to change from opponent and another chance to go out and execute it.
And, of course, we look forward to seeing this fight here at the end of the month, June 29th, Bellator 201, live on the Paramount Network, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. out on the West Coast. Ryan, as always, appreciate the time. Good luck in the fight.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Valerie, I really appreciate the time. Of course, you know, after you won your Bellator debut at the end of last year, I think everyone just expected that you would be getting the next 125-pound title fight. Was that your expectations?
Not necessarily. It's like I've been told that most likely that was going to be what was going to happen. Not saying that I deserve to have a title shot right away. For me, I mean, you need to prove yourself and challenge yourself, but it's just like it's been put in my mind, and obviously this is what I want. So but I think, you know, it's great what's going on right now. The fight with Christina is a good fight for both of us to open the doors for the title shot. I think it would make sense.
In terms of that title shot, do you feel like the change in opponent to Christina is actually better for you in terms of making that case?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. That's why I was happy when I got this call. I mean, I spoke to my coaches, and for me, just to make more sense, she's the person I should have been fighting, and it's way more motivating for both of us. It's a big fight. It's going to be a great fight. And we both have a lot to win. We both have a lot to lose in this fight. I think I have more to lose than her. you know, it's a big fight for her, too.
In terms of the change in opponent, did it cause a drastic change in your preparations?
Drastic? Yeah, well, yes, we did a drastic change, but a good change for me. I mean, I make my training camp so much more fun. I really enjoy striking. And I've been doing jiu-jitsu for a long time. It's not because I don't have any ground or anything. It's just, I'm hitting pads and I'm smiling the whole time. I love this. So to get back at this training, obviously, I'm training with a lot of striker right now because she's more of a striker. She's kicking a lot. So I got back into my old kickboxing years of training, which I haven't done in a long time. And I really, really love it. So it makes my camp even more fun, not necessarily easier. I'm training really hard, but I'm responding really good to this camp, and I love it.
Do you remember when you initially fell in love with the striking aspect of this sport?
Oh, yes. I was 15 years old. I was in a juvenile center, and I've been there for like a year and a half, and they told me, it's time for you to go home, but you really need to start doing any kind of sport. I had so much anger, and I was short fused. So I said, I want to do kickboxing. And I found a place, and I fell in love right away. I'm still friend with it was a girl teaching there. She was teaching her very first class, and I was doing my very first class. And we became friends, and after a month, I told her, listen, I want to fight. I want to fight for real. I want to do it for, I don't, just don't want to do like punching in the air. So she took me to her coach, and my first kickboxing fight, I was 16.
Now, were they the ones that gave you the nickname Trouble?
No. Hey, you know, I kind of forgot about them, and somebody named their kid Zena. My first name, E.T., the Princess Warrior, he called me Zena, my first coach. He said I was looking like Zena. So that was my first nickname. And then, the coach that gave me the nickname Trouble was Victor Vargutsky. When I started training at TriStar, my daughter was young. I had a business. I was always late running with my baby in one arm, my gear on one side. And obviously, all the time, something was missing. Either I was missing my mouthpiece, missing one glove, missing her milk bottle. I mean, I was all over the place. And I'm pretty clumsy also. So for little things like that, you start calling me Trouble and call my daughter Trouble Quarter. And that always stays.
Awesome story there. You know, in terms of this fight, we always hear, you know, the cliche stylistically, I love this fight. I love this matchup for myself. So why would you say you stylistically like this matchup?
I'm sorry, you're going to have to repeat that.
We always hear in the fight game how they talk about stylistically, I love this fight for myself. So for you, why do you stylistically like this fight against Christina?
Because I can strike and I know it's going to be a good fight. I know I'm going to watch the fight after and I'm going to be, man, this is a great fight. I know for a fact. I'm seething in my head. And, you know, just, I love to fight strikers. Look at my career. I mean, the most exciting fight we did was against the stand-up fighters.
And when fans have watched yourself or watched Christina fight, you know, particularly with Christina inside Bellator, they've seen the striking aspect of her game. What sticks out to you about why she's had so much success?
I mean, she's really like a natural born fighter. You can see in her spirit. She's just there to fight that she doesn't care. I love that. I'm a little bit like this too. And, very calm, and she got good skills. She has a good time. I think she has a lot to learn still, but she's going to improve, and, you know, she already have the most important of the game right now. So, the other thing is also, I mean, Hardy didn't fight her the smartest way. I don't think she was prepared for that. I don't know if they thought it was maybe going to be an easy fight, but the way she was moving, it was so dangerous what she was doing against someone who's kicking like this. So she made Christina look really good in that fight. That's pretty much what happened. And we see, like, she had a tougher fight against Emily because Emily is a bit more well-rounded, and she's more used to see all those kicks coming and all the stuff coming. But she also had a big size disadvantage. So that was a pretty good fight also against Emily.
And of course, you know, we've talked about a win here. It should put you, in for a title shot. Have you thought about the main event of this fight card and who you think is going to walk away as a champion?
Like I said to somebody else earlier, I feel bad, but I have no clue. The other girl, I don't know her. I've never seen her fight. I don't watch fights just to watch fights. I never sit down in front of the TV just to watch fights unless it's somebody that I'm going to fight. Or a close friend. So I don't know much about her opponent. It's hard for me. I have a lot of respect for Ilima, and I kind of had in mind to fight her, so I would love her to win. But it's hard for me to judge this fight. You know, I'm going to have to take a look at it if I have the time to focus on that before my fight.
Val, I appreciate the time and look forward to seeing your fight here at the end of the month.
Thank you.
I am now joined by one of the men that's going to be the co-main event of LFA 44 on Friday night, June the 29th. Of course, the guy we've had on the show many a times before, Casey Kenny. Casey, as always, man, I appreciate time. I guess part of the storyline with this fight here, you're going up to 135. And I know we've talked about that in the past. You're like, hey, 35 comes up, I'm going to take it. 25's there, I'm going to take it. Is that just basically they offered me a 35 fight and I was ready to go?
Yeah, exactly, dude. You know, last LFA in January, we went through quite a bit of opponents, and I was just like 25, 35, catch weight, whatever, I'll take anything, you know. And this time, first guy they offered me happened to be Roman Salazar at 135. So I'm always for not cutting weight, you know.
Of course, Roman.
Definitely either weight class, yeah. Anytime.
Roman, former UFC fighter, were you familiar with him when the fight offer came in?
Yeah, you know, actually he was one of the guys in January they threw at me. I don't know, whatever reason he had going on in January wasn't the time for that. And then, you know, I've also been watching him fight in the local scene, the WFF, before he got into the UFC. I think one of the first fights I checked out, maybe even before I had my first amateur fight out here, it happened to be Roman Salazar and I think like Michael Parker, two pretty high level pro guys going at it. So he's been at it for a while. I've been watching him compete for a long time.
Did you always kind of feel like it was going to be destiny that you two would step into the cage against each other?
You know, I guess I never really thought about 135 up until, you know, I got a little bit bigger. When I first started as an amateur, I was definitely a 125er, and then, you know, mid-20s kind of settled in. I thickened up a little bit, and, you know, now 35's in the question too. So, you know, I always saw him as somebody that I kind of looked up to and, you know, somebody to chase after, but really not in my weight class at the time when I, you know, when I was young thinking about that. But now he's right in front of me, so I got business to take care of.
What gets you excited about this fight?
Ah, man, you know, former UFC vet, you know, a tough, durable guy. You know, be really my first UFC vet that I've went up against. You know, I think my last like five opponents, you know, since the Tachi Palace title have been UFC caliber opponents. But this is a guy that's, you know, been there, done that. And now he's back on the come up and looking to get back in, you know. Definitely not my first time against a veteran, but it'll be a great fight, man. It's always a good time going in against those veterans.
You know, of course, people remember, you know, last year being on the Contender Series, and of course, Contender Series going on now. Is there any piece of advice you would offer anyone that's going on that show?
Man, just be patient. You know, I watched, I think, every Contender Series from last season and even this season. And, you know, you can tell the second time I came out, I was a lot calmer. I settled into the fight the way I wanted to. The first time I was like, oh my God, there's Dana White. I got to knock this guy out. And I was tripping over my own feet type of thing. And I noticed a lot of other people did that as well. You know, it's a fight and the adrenaline dump happens, and but I think it's happening even more on the Contender Series. So just take a deep breath and be patient.
You know, because, I mean, look, we all know with that show, it's about going out there and getting that first round finish. Everyone knows it. It's not like it's some hidden secret. But it calls, you know, it talks about being, you know, you got to be calm and you got to be patient. I mean, for you, is that something that it took some time for you to just get that experience inside the cage to kind of, you know, acquire that trait?
Yeah, definitely. I remember my first, like, you know, pretty much all my amateur fights except for the last one. I don't even really remember what happened. You know, my training kicked in and it went good, but it was like, oh man, that was like a total, you know, mind fuck. I didn't even know what was going on. I got out of the cage and I was like, that was awesome, but I don't really remember what happened or what I was doing, you know, and then kind of down the line as a pro, you know, you settle in, you start to see things. And then now, even, you know, I had a little bit of the Contender Series, the pressure of, you know, the caliber of the fight. But, you know, now I just settle into the fights. It's like another walk in the park.
You know, I was watching the PFL show last night, and they're talking to Sean O'Connell, who didn't exactly have the greatest of first rounds, and then he comes back and in the second round gets knocked out, and he's doing the post fight interview, and he's basically like, I really don't remember what happened. For you, how often does that happen where, like, you know, you get the victory, whatnot, and, you know, you're doing a post fight interview, and in your mind, you're trying to think, okay, what happened in the first round? What happened? Does that happen a lot where, like, in the moment, you just kind of forget?
Yeah, I mean, every time I fought, I went back and watched the video, and it's completely different on video than how it is in my mind. Like, there's been a couple fights, like the Kakdak fight at Tachi Palace. You know, I broke my hand, and we butted heads, and I split my eye open. And, you know, it was a pretty good fight, but I never really – I didn't say I dominated, but it was pretty even, you know. But I felt like I got beat up the whole time just because I came out, you know, all banged up. And I go back and I watch the fight, and I was like, you know, hey, it was just a pretty close fight. I actually had a lot of good moments, you know, up until the chokeout. But in my head, it was like, man, I got beat up the whole time until I tapped him out. And a couple other fights have been like that as well. But, you know, it's definitely different every time when you watch the video.
Do you all walk in those sessions like, oh man, this is not going to be a good film session because of that situation? Like, you feel like, man, I didn't perform well, but then, you know, is it kind of that, oh, God, it's like, I come from a football world where if you have a bad game, the last thing you want to do is sit in that film room with the coach where they're going to ridicule you. Is that kind of what it's like for you?
Right. Well, you know, fortunately, out of 10 professional fights, I've won all 10, you know, in my head at least. And so I've went back and, you know, just kind of see how I did. And I don't think I've had a bad performance, really. You know, I definitely that had, you know, better ones than others, but I feel like I've, you know, in 10 pro fights, I've pretty much dominated the whole time. So, I haven't got to experience that just yet, but you know, going back and watching film, I used to film all my judo and wrestling matches, and the ones I lost were definitely the hardest ones to watch. But you got to watch them because you got to figure out what you did. You have to.
And of course, part of the sport is just evolving. And I know another interview you did, you mentioned about being in Vegas, training with Extreme Couture. You went to the PI, and we've talked about you going to, and training at various gyms. What was your biggest takeaway being around Extreme Couture and being around the PI that you've brought back to your home gym?
Definitely. I guess this was my first time at the Extreme Couture gym, but you know, I just went to train with a friend, Kyle Reyes, who actually got a second round finish in the ACB fights in Australia. But you know, just knowing that the stuff that we're doing here at my home gym is, you know, pretty identical to, you know, all the stuff that all these other guys are doing. You know, something I kind of already knew, but just going out there, getting the work in with the different bodies, the high level guys, and just kind of noticing that, hey, these guys are kind of doing the same thing I'm doing. You know, maybe I'm doing it just a little bit different, but you know, it's the stuff that works. And it's just kind of good to go out and, you know, get different bodies, get different looks. People don't know your stuff. You don't know their stuff, you know, which is exactly how the fight is. So it's a great experience to take, you know, especially the high level guys.
You know, a win here, you know, would get you one step closer to that ultimate goal. Is, do you even allow yourself to think about that?
You know, not anymore. I went through a period over the, you know, like the Contender Series this summer. I kind of like settled into, I should be in the UFC type of thing. And now it's just, I got to sit back, you know, enjoy life, enjoy that I'm a fighter. I love fighting, you know, whether it's for, you know, LFA or the UFC or Contender Series, doesn't matter where it's at, an amateur event, you know, not possible anymore. But I just love fighting and I love training and just take it one step at a time. You know, after this next one, if they sign me, that'd be great. But if not, you know, line the next guy up. I'm just going to keep putting people away until they beg for me.
You mentioned about that love for fighting. You mentioned, hey, you love fighting, you love training. You know, some guys might say, hey, they may not necessarily love the training part of it. But for you, is there ever a time where, like, your love maybe goes down a notch? Maybe it's if you have, like, a bad day in the room?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their ups and downs. But, you know, that's what makes you tough. And that's, you learn from all of it. And you know, I've had a pretty good road, but I haven't had a perfect road along the way. I'm definitely learning still to this day. And but man, there's a lot of stuff that I've been through that guys only get to experience, you know, when they're at that top level. So all these lumps that I'm taking right now, when it is my time to make my run, I'll be ready. You know, I've already been there, done that, and you know, maybe there's a few more things to learn, but I feel pretty confident making a run, you know, at the top level right now.
We mentioned at the start, 35-25, whatever comes up is, you know, let's just say a short notice opportunity came up in, you know, say the UFC. Is it that same mentality? Hey, if it's a 35, let's go. If it's 25, let's go. I mean, is that,
I mean,
mentality?
It's out of the question, but they want me at 45, 55, 70. I don't care. I would say yes. I'd fight them all, you know, especially a UFC debut. That's a no-brainer for sure, 100%. But, yeah, either one, 25, 35, I'd take either one.
You find yourself watching every flyweight fight in the UFC just because you never know when that call could come?
Let's just say I watch every flyweight fight and then just sit back and shake my head and smile. That's all I can do. I just sit back, shake my head, smile, and wait my turn.
Yeah, I did think of you when I was watching the New York show when Shorty Torres made his debut. Made me think of you of we almost saw that fight.
I was hoping my manager actually texted me about that fight. Actually, Jared Brooks is a dream fight for me. I used to wrestle with his brother, and I've known him since he's been a little guy, running around freestyle wrestling tournaments in Indiana. I think we've actually had a couple submission wrestling matches as kids, warming up for wrestling tournaments and stuff. So I guess we could say we were kind of like rivals, you know, like my senior year of high school, I placed fourth, he placed fifth, his older brother. And then, you know, shoot, I think the first time we wrestled was like 10 years old, 11 years old. So we wrestled for a good 6-7 year span. You know, we saw each other a handful of times. So that's a super interesting matchup. And I think he's got a lot of holes in his game. So I think that would be a great fight.
A crazy ending in that fight. I mean, he's winning the entire fight. One mistake.
Yep. So, you know, his last fight, he impressed me with the, you know, he actually threw some punches, got down, and was, you know, I thought it was going to go the other way. It did go the other way, but not exactly how we planned.
Yeah. But just another classic form. One mistake and it can end your night. So, but we do look forward to seeing your fight here at LFA 44 there in Arizona. As always, Casey, appreciate time. And let everyone know they can follow you on social media.
Yeah, for sure, man. Always a pleasure to be on the show. You can follow me at CKMMA125 on Twitter or Instagram. And then you can also follow me at Casey Kenny on Facebook.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man, it's going to be the main event of Cage Titans 39 on June the 30th. Peter Barrick, or Slippery Pete, as you may know him by, or maybe if you watch all of his Facebook Live videos that he puts out there. Pete, man, how's it going?
Oh, everything's going great, man. It's been a really good camp. Everything's feeling good, you know, moving good, timing's right, you know, the power's there, the cardio's behind me, so everything's coming together nicely.
We talked prior to the last fight against Jay and kind of the mindset heading into that one. How is the mindset different this time around as the last fight?
Last time was more of just getting that win, getting the momentum back, and now it's back to work, back to business. Set myself up for a nice little main event fight here with Cage Titans and just looking to make some noise with a nice, quick, fashionable finish.
And, of course, you got a quick win there against Jay. I mean, and I know, look, everyone wants to get in there, in and out as quick as possible, but how do you make sure when you go in there, while you're looking for a quick finish, that you're also being a smart fighter?
Right. It did go, it was 52 seconds or 53 seconds. It went really fast. I was in there just kind of, you know, crossing my T's and dot my I's, making sure everything felt right. And I landed a couple leg kicks, and it kind of looked like it stole the fire out of his eyes. And then I don't want to say he gave me his back, but it seemed pretty easy once he started to feel what I was putting on him.
And, since then, I mean, was it right back Monday, right back into the training room?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I took a couple days off, trained that week right after the fight, and then we headed out to the UFC PI with a group of Cage Titan guys and got a week out there in Vegas training at that facility. Unfortunately, Sean Lally didn't win his fight against Chris Curtis, but he was on the Contender Series 2 weeks ago, and JoJo, being a member of the Ultimate Fighter season that is airing or has just finished airing, was our nice little segue into the Performance Institute. So we had a real good time out there.
For someone who has been in this fight game for a while, what was your biggest takeaway about the Performance Institute?
What was really cool is you hear all like the negative things about the UFC and the Reebok deal and how fighters aren't making the same money anymore. I guess you hear a lot more negative press than you do positive press. So to get out to the PI and see what they put out there for their fighters, the facilities that they've created, the environment that's there is just really incredible.
You know, and I've talked to, you know, UFC fighters, and it seems more about the education and the various little tools they have out there. Was there anything that you saw there that you're like, man, I got to bring this back to my home gym?
Not so much. I mean, they had a hot tub and a cold tub right next to each other, which was really cool. So you could do the contrast work if you wanted to, or you could go into an ice bath. They kept the tub at, I think, at like a solid 40 degrees. So, that's pretty cold water. So it was really nice to jump in there at the end of the day to help your body recover and whatnot. But, I do cryotherapy. They have that out there. The sauna, the steam, some of the facilities that I train at have those already. The mat space was incredible. It was really cool to see a full, not, I don't think it was a full size octagon, but an octagon and the boxing ring right next to each other. I mean, everything out there is so beautiful and state of the art. But one of the things I really like that, unfortunately, I don't have the money to incorporate into my training is one of the metrics or one of the devices that tracks, I would say, innumerable metrics on their athletes. And, you know, they put their, it's like a heart rate monitor. They throw it on, it takes certain readings and then they log it back in and it updates to one of their trainers. And the trainer actually stays on top of every single fighter that's on the UFC roster that's come out to receive that piece of hardware. So it was really cool. And what's even cooler is not only did they have that device, but they hired the guy who created it. And now he is on their payroll and he works for the UFC. So he knows everything about the device to and through, could explain everything, talk about it very intelligently, gave us live demonstrations on how they track it with JoJo and with Sean. So it was really incredible to see some of the technology that's out there too.
So in terms of recovery, is there a preference, cold tub or cryotherapy?
I mean, they both chase the same goal. The cold tubs, you can stay in a little bit longer, and the cryotherapy just gets colder for a shorter amount of time. I mean, I just did cryotherapy today over at Zenden. They're one of my sponsors, and I think I hit the negative 230 degrees about a minute in, and you do 3 minutes. So I got a full 2 minutes at the lowest temperature. And then earlier in the week, I was fortunate enough to walk in to do cryo right after another athlete was in there. And I got the full 3 minutes at negative 230. And I really noticed the difference when you're down that cold for that long.
And the opponent here, Conor Berry, 4-2 in his career. Assess him as an opponent. Why do you like this matchup for yourself?
We had tried to fight before in the past, and he pulled out of the fight maybe about a month out. So that kind of just puts a little chip on my shoulder. You know, I was preparing for him, and then he pulled out for no good reason, really. It wasn't an injury. It wasn't a series of unfortunate events. Well, kind of, but not really pertaining to him. And I just thought it was very disrespectful the way him and his camp went about it. So it'll be nice to get in there and remind them of what they tried to get away from.
When this fight first comes to you for this event, what was there a thought process of, you know what, after what happened last time, no, I'm not going to take this fight because, you know, maybe you're concerned that, you know, he wouldn't make it the fight night?
No, you know, I was speaking with someone. I think I was talking to Ed Kapp, and he was like, yeah, you know, he looked it up while we were talking and said that he's actually pulled out of more fights than he's fought as a pro. And that kind of, you know, put a little thought on my mind, but I quickly dismissed that. You know, I don't know what kind of person would pull out of a main event fight unless they broke their leg or something along those lines. So hopefully he puts his money where his mouth is and we get to fight next Saturday.
We're 8 days from the fight. So what's kind of what is the mindset right now of, like, is it just kind of like, you know, hey, last couple of training sessions and just getting the weight where you want it?
Yeah, I mean, my weight has been great. I came out of my morning training session yesterday at 162.5. The fight's at 155. Fighting up at 155 opposed to 145 makes it a lot easier to make weight and not have to worry so much about weight management. So I've really just been focusing on technique, timing, skill, working heavily with my boxing coaches, heavily with Crew Mark at Sigatong, and my other coaches at Junigo. So it's really just given me the opportunity to focus on myself and my craft.
Focusing on yourself. We hear that term all the time. Well, what's that mean for you? Is it just kind of, is it not worrying too much about your opponent?
I don't want to say that so much. I mean, I've done some research on him. I've watched a couple clips of some of his fights. You know, you can't discredit a 4-2 record, but I just don't think he's on my level. So anything that he can do, I can do better. He actually fought Jay Ellis in January, and I beat him by, I think, 30 seconds on the finish. So, you know, that's not a causation or anything, but just a little fuel to my fire. You know, we fought the same guy and I finished him faster. So I'm looking forward to him coming out looking to scrap, you know, and I imagine he's going to try to use his length. He's a little bit taller than me, but, you know, if you remember the fight with Vince, I was able to make some game time changes and pull that victory out on top. So I'm not super concerned with anything that he's going to bring to the table that I haven't already seen yet. And it's really allowed me to focus on my game plan.
Court, we're halfway through 2018. Have you mapped out what's after this?
As far as I know, I'm pretty sure I could still make a contender series at the end of July. If this fight, you know, finishes fast with no injuries. I mean, of course, I would much rather, you know, not fighting on the contender series, get maybe a last minute fill in on a UFC card. And but, you know, any opportunity that's given, I'll take. I'm going to be 32 in August. It's no secret. I'm not a young buck in this game anymore. So any opportunity that presents itself, I'll take it. Obviously, I have my ideal way of how it would work out. But at this point, I'm here to make a statement.
And final thing here, you mentioned about this being at 55. We know you fought 45 in the past. Is 45 done and over with?
Oh, no, no. I imagine that if I get the call to the next level, it'll be at 45. What fighting at 155 has done for me is allowed me to learn how to maintain my weight between 160 and 165. So to the next step, sorry, oops, go way down. The next step would be to maintain my weight between 155 and 160. And that's next on the list of things to do.
But, of course, up first, we got this fight here, Cage Titans 39 on June the 30th. Of course, so we always mention, if you ever want tickets from Pete, just go to his Facebook page, and we'll see what you're jamming out to while you're riding around town. And I did see your video the other day where there was no audio, and you had to do another video.
Oh, yeah. It was like probably one of the better videos that I had done in a while, and everybody was like, yeah, we can't hear you. So, you know, sometimes you lose the gold like that every once in a while, and you got to try to recreate it. But that was a good one that unfortunately didn't get the audio.
And, of course, the thing I love about being a marketing guy, you always work in your sponsors. That some way in the video, you work them in.
Always, always, always going to have them on there at some point or another. And it's always important to give appreciation to the people that have helped you out.
And, of course, where can everybody follow you on social media, man?
Slippery Pete 145 on Instagram, Slippery Pete on Facebook. You can look for me at Peter Barrett for my regular page, Slippery World on Twitter, and I think that's it for me at this point.
And there you have my conversations with Ryan Couture, Valerie Letourneau, Casey Kinney, and Peter Barrett. I want to thank those fighters for taking time out of their busy schedules to talk to me about their fights. Of course, Bellator on Friday night. If I'm not watching live, I'll definitely be watching via DVR. I do like that main event between McFarlane and Lara. Daniel, I'll get your thoughts on this. I feel like I said this to somebody the other day. I go, does the Bellator matchmakers hate Ryan Couture?
It's insane when you look at his matchups.
Like, this is such an awful matchup.
And you mentioned it's not a great fight for Saito Wada in terms of what he's done. This isn't like something that's going to elevate him. It could potentially be another one in a row. It most likely will. But when you have a guy who has that Couture last name and you're Bellator, you would think you would do a better job of taking care of him and maybe turning him into some type of, you know, valued property.
You would think, like, this is just one of those matchups. Like, this is, like, I compare this matchup to when people talk about how the UFC should do Curtis Blaydes versus Alexander Volkov. That is such an awful matchup for Alexander Volkov. And this is, I just, you know, I feel, you know, why do I see a brutal knockout like we saw Patricky Pitbull knock out Ryan Couture?
Because that's what Iwad brings to the table. And watching the fights, there's not a whole lot to think that Couture's striking defense is at a point that's going to delay that from happening.
By the way, speaking of the LFA card on Friday night, the main event, you got Christian Aguilera. Of course, we've had on the podcast before. I'm actually going to have an interview with him up on the MMAReport.com this week, so look out for that. Also got an interview with Robbie Peralta So look for that later on this week. Also, line up some other interviews. I know I'm going to be talking to Zach Otto. There's another awful matchup. Who in the Sage Northcutt camp thought a fight against Zach Otto is a good matchup?
I think Sage surrounds himself with people that thinks he can go out there and beat Conor McGregor. So
When I first learned of that fight, I thought it was a joke. I was like, there's no way they're doing that fight.
Yeah. Things have changed for Sage.
How much of a favorite will Zach Otto be in that fight? Because Zach Otto is not exactly a small 170er.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he'll be a much bigger favorite than Rose's against Jessica Andrade, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, man. So what you got going on this weekend, man?
Not too much. I was going to watch some mixed martial arts and, going to take in some wrestling in Laredo, Texas. Going to go work some camera for that. So do that.
I thought it was Parts Unknown.
Parts Unknown is where I do my reporting, Jason. I recorded my last one yesterday, and that won't go up till later in the week. But for that one, I recap all the matches that happened in my local wrestling promotion. And this next week, I'm going to be on top of a roof, Jason. So look forward to that.
On top of a roof. You're not going all Cactus Jack on us, are you?
I might. I'm going to do an elbow drop onto incoming traffic.
Did you see the viral video of the dude doing the elbow drop on the alligator?
No. I think I saw a tweet, but I never actually saw the video. How did he survive?
Oh, it's clearly, it looks like, you know, somewhere, I'm not even sure where it was, but basically I saw someone, so it was his buddy was in the water, like the alligator's like kind of swimming toward him, and I've seen someone say, that's the type of friend you need, the friend that'll do an elbow drop, Randy Savage style to save you.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the worst strategy ever. Like, that is not a shoot move, that is not something you get taught at an MMA gym. The elbow drop probably hurts. The elbow drop hurts the guy doing the elbow drop more than the guy receiving it, by the way. Like, that's an important thing to note. Jumping up from something and landing, it hurts more than, like, an elbow.
Like, first off, what goes through your mind of, I need to save my friend here. All right, we're going elbow off the top rope.
Well, we know this guy is from Florida. Like, this guy is absolutely from Florida if he has that kind of a brain.
No way.
There's no way.
First off, I don't understand why someone decides they want to be an alligator wrestler.
I don't know, because I feel like you got to spend a lot of time developing those skills. And it's like, at what point in your life did you make that decision? And like, how are you training? Like who are the people that failed in the training? You know, like, what happened to them? Were they just eaten by alligators? There's so many questions.
Well, think about this. We now live in a world. There was a show on Animal Planet. I think it was Animal Planet, where they would, you know, catch these, you know, alligators there in people's yards, whatnot. But now there's just, you know, I mean, how many seasons has Swamp People been on for?
Yeah. And also there's just Twitter. Every single, like back in the day, if you would go outside and you ran into an alligator, you know what you would do? You would go back inside. You know what you'd think now? Ooh, this is 500 retweets. I'm going to go attack this alligator. Like that is how social media has ruined society.
Oh, man, you're so spot on. By the way, did you like my chicken wing Instagram post the other night?
There is, save for you in a swimsuit, there's nothing more exciting you could post on social media than chicken wings, Jason. I love it.
They were delicious, man. They were delicious.
They never aren't. Chicken wings are never aren't delicious. There's only good and better.
Yeah, it'd been a while since I'd gone out for chicken wings, so it was very good. So, but that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, this podcast comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com. If you ever have any questions or comments, you can either tweet at me at Jason_Floyd. You can also tweet at Daniel at Daniel Galvan, DGG. Or if you want to shoot me an email, it's just simply Jason@radioinfluence.com. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday morning on radioinfluence.com.
This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill quick fix on Radio Influence.
Well, you can clearly see Antoine Rose hauling butt out of the car away from the officer. Again, the officer is behind cover of his police cruiser. He's standing between the door and the inside of the car. He has the weapon drawn on the car. Antoine flees in the other direction. And there was no sign that he was armed at the time he was running. So therefore, you cannot say that I believe he was armed, and therefore I believe he would have been a threat to the public, because you cannot articulate that just simply based on the fact that the vehicle may have been used in a drive-by shooting. Just because it may have been used in a drive-by shooting does not suggest that he was armed at the exact moment he was running away. Now, keep in mind, the guns were recovered inside of the vehicle.
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.